Welcome to the February 15th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer the questions that that you may be having. We're in the, where are we at? We're in the the Leo P. Flynn Gallery today. I was about to say the Kirby Family Studio, and I had to correct myself. But we are certainly in the Flynn Gallery today in Sioux Falls. Have a whole host of folks with us today. Joel Brovelite is here, our Mac guru. Hello, Joel.
Hello.
Any big surprises last night for Valentine's Day?
Just that it was Valentine's Day. No, that's not true.
All right. You honored that tradition well, I'm sure. Amos Asip is here. He's with Exigent Solutions. Hello, Amos.
Good afternoon.
Have a secure Valentine's Day?
Pretty secure. No major breaches.
nothing got breached, huh?
No.
That's all right, I guess. John T. Meyer from just up the street, Lemonly.
Yes. Yeah.
How's things?
Things are good in the Lemonly world. I was down in Orlando for a couple days this week. Actually, 24 hours. I wish it was longer. It was 80 degrees in Orlando, but I was attending the HIMSS conference, which is a massive healthcare innovation tech conference.
Okay.
I've never seen a trade show floor so large. I've seen large trade shows, but the booths were amazing. Like things hanging from the ceiling. Some of these companies had two-story booths, so mm-hmm. that you could like go up second
go up
level
the stairs and then meet really separately.
And then really feel like you are, you know, above everyone else.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I bet. Company, you know, we had two clients there that we designed some work for, so that's why I was there. But I bet people dropped $500,000 to $1 million on some of these booths. It was incredible.
That's in
like a compelling and depressing way, right?
What was the coolest thing you saw there, tech-wise? I mean, something you could bring back and use in.
Well, it wasn't so much like gadgets, but like, uh-huh. I mean, one brand I thought was cool. They're B2B, but they're trying to go to B2C, but. As a parent of a 3-year-old and now a 12-week-old, it's like it was almost like Nest for diagnosing your children. Kind of they're trying to solve the should I go to the ER or not.
Mm-hmm.
So a little like at-home camera, take the temperature, and then the data and the images go directly to your provider. And you know then the doctor can say, I looked at the photo, like you should definitely come in, you have strep throat, or you're probably okay, like give them some Motrin, you know, whatever. I thought that was interesting.
Okay, and they're willing to take that risk, huh?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like all these healthcare solutions are so fraught with complexity, and
I love telemedicine. I do. I've used it, and they lean heavily towards you need to go now.
Yeah,
and I understand that, sure. And I understand why.
I mean, my biggest takeaway, just the entrepreneur in me, is like, okay, if you can spend $1 million on your booth, then clearly there's a lot of money in healthcare in terms of what you could get back, right? I mean, Epic, a big EHR out of Madison, Wisconsin, I read somewhere they had 13,000 square feet in their trade show booth. It's ridiculous.
That is that sounds crazy, but fun. And so you think you're going to go again?
We'll see if we have work, if we do more work in that space. But
oh, very cool. Yeah. Heather Benson is also joining us today. Heather's here to talk about... we kind of got the ball rolling last show. It was two shows ago. We started talking about some elder issues and technology, and Heather is here to talk more about that. It's kind of, Heather, how do you want to describe it? Kids helping parents deal with modern-day machines? Is that kind of the...
Well, I think it's, you know, tech is pervasive on every level of American life, and there's no longer, shall we say, a protected demographic, including some people who didn't grow up with technology at all, and there's an opportunity for those of us who are in the know to be the ones to make life easier.
Opportunity, huh? I thought we were just kind of forced into it because we showed up for Christmas or a holiday or a birthday or something. Hey, my Wi-Fi is not working. You want to hook my printer up for me? I thought that was kind of how that worked, but great. Well, we're going to dive into that second segment. Talk a little bit about passwords today, I believe. Just a continuing series of things. Folks, this is a listener interactive program. If you have a question, we'll try to come up with that answer. The Facebook page is simply facebook.com/techradio. We have a blog posted there of the elder issues that we're going to talk about today and expand on that maybe a little bit more. Joel, I got a chance to poke fun a little bit at... Apple announced news. There's a bad lip sync or a bad lip reading. You know that series.
Yeah.
They did a takeoff on Apple announcements, and it's very funny.
I'll have to check it out. I haven't seen it yet.
Link that up on the Facebook page as well, okay. Just to give you a little something to see when you go out there.
All right. So they had a good one. They had a good one for football at the end of the season. The bad lip.
The 2019. Yeah. Yeah, they did stay in the union. They kind of do all the topical things. So that's out at the Facebook page as well. Don't be shy. Send us a text. It's 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. And our phone number to chat with us live on the air is 800-852-0214. Twitter users, @KentSDPB is that address. And our email address, probably the most popular way to get a hold of us, inthemoment@sdpb.org. And you are in the moment here. Some news of the past weeks, I guess. Nothing much bigger than the Amazon announcement that they were not going to New York. A lot of people are celebrating that. A lot of people are scratching their heads about that. But that was 25,000 jobs they were going to put, was it in Queens? Long Island, right in there?
Yeah, let's see.
I think so.
So,
you're right.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that wasn't a minority outcry on that. I think there are a lot of people that would have liked those 25,000 jobs. I just think it was too much pressure on the very local level. So, you know, all in all, probably a smart decision for Amazon. But, I mean, I think overall, state-wise, I think New York would have rather have had those jobs.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I think it became this big dog and pony show with Amazon. And I heard one take saying it was always going to be in New York because Bezos has a home in New York, just like he has a home in Seattle. That was that person's take. He just wants to have the shortest commute. But it became this big PR dog and pony show because they were trying to get as many tax breaks and incentives. And basically, New York just rolled out the red carpet. And then when you started getting a little bit of, probably started as a minority dissenting opinion, but then you have someone like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's got probably the loudest megaphone next to Donald Trump these days. She started kind of, you know, that's her home turf, started rallying the kind of the outcry, and the groundswell grew, and then there was a lot of bad PR for Amazon, and ultimately they pulled out. So yeah, it was an example of, I guess you can make your voice heard, right?
It's funny, you know, I think they were going to give them $3 billion in tax breaks on that, but I think the projection was $22 billion over 10 years that they would have made, which is completely opposite of the setup in Wisconsin with the
Foxconn
factory. They were, I think, giving them $5 billion, maybe $6
billion. Okay.
And I think that they were going to make 20,000 jobs. So they weren't even going to hit that number. So it was something like they were paying $200,000 per job or something like that. But for some reason, this seems to be such a so much bigger deal, you know. And Amazon can go wherever they want. So
true.
Well, and I don't know.
I think it's kind of a non-story, really.
Well, I think the Foxconn deal kind of falling apart in the last few weeks probably didn't help matters. I mean, you had all that backlash in Wisconsin. Nobody wanted it there. They didn't like how the numbers played out. And then Foxconn suddenly says, oh, by the way, this probably won't be manufacturing. This is probably going to be R&D, which we all know is not going to be 20,000 jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, the public is easy to sway when it doesn't feel right. And it didn't feel right in Wisconsin.
Well, it's more than just a math problem, right? Because the math is there, but there's a quality of life thing. I mean, you're seeing a huge, tremendous problems in Seattle where everyone's having to move out, and the cost of rent, and everything's going up.
I don't want to say that I think it was bad that they're not going to be in New York. I think overall, what I was trying to say is overall in New York, I think New York State wanted it there. But I think on the hyper-local level, they didn't want it because it would have changed their the way they live, would have brought rents up, and forced people out. So I think probably
overall, when you say overall
it was
the
good.
State as in the government, yes.
Absolutely.
I think overall the people, I would say no.
In the state, I'm not so sure about that, but I think on the local level, people definitely didn't want
city,
to.
The city, which New York State is the majority.
Yeah. I mean, not the whole city. It's a pretty big city.
No, but I mean, like 8 million people in New York City outweigh the rest of the city.
Right, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
So they've backed out and they've said that they may not place this anywhere else. There might not be a second headquarters after that, you know, to replace this. They might either make the other one. They're going to Virginia.
Yep.
Might make that bigger. Might just spread it out over company.
Honestly,
one.
It's so close anyway. Those, I think it was a 4-hour drive, even less if you're flying Virginia to New York.
Guess where else Jeff Bezos has a house? Virginia.
Right.
And so that was a take that I had heard, that ultimately, like, this was just a ploy to get as many incentives and bonuses as possible. It was always going to be in D.C. and Virginia. New York.
Speaking of Jeff Bezos, he's got a little bit of a little PR thing going on at the moment. It's, you know, it's kind of not really a side story, but a whole nother enchilada, isn't it?
you're just all over him today. Yes. Yeah. So Jeff Bezos has an interesting 30 days in terms of PR. I would actually say somehow he's swung this and is in the positive bucket of PR right now.
I agree.
And so context here, essentially a few weeks ago or in January, the National Enquirer leaked a story of some pretty graphic text messages that Jeff Bezos was sending to his love partner, his affair that he was having. He and his wife came out and announced that they were getting a divorce. They were separated and they were getting a divorce. And it just, you know, all this sentiment of like, maybe Jeff Bezos not that great a guy. Like, it was swinging in the negative way. A couple weeks later, he comes out and kind of drops a bombshell last Thursday night, I believe, on Medium.com, which I thought was really fascinating. So Medium.com is a publishing platform started by, Evan Williams, who also started Twitter. And most people probably don't know Medium.com, but now they do. And so Jeff Bezos took the offensive, wrote a blog post saying the National Enquirer, the holding company AMI, is trying to essentially extort me, blackmail me through email. And he took screenshots of the email and put it in there, and he put the bullseye directly on AMI. And unfortunately for AMI and National Enquirer, they're messing with the person who has the most resources on this planet.
And a newspaper.
Yes. Well, and then that's, you know, depending on your opinion, there's questions of whether Donald Trump's fingerprints are on this somewhere.
Well, yeah. Didn't it turn out, though, that it was his former mistress's brother? Jeff, do you think that's what that was?
He took a deep sigh.
Yeah.
It's kind of fascinating. I really haven't been paying too much attention to that one. I'm sure it'll work out. I know there's a federal investigation going on about who's doing what and on what side with the National Enquirer and its parent company, but it will play out, I guess. So.
Yeah, well, that's.
I think it's the biggest story of the year so far. I mean, we're only 2 months in, right? Not even. But because it's a fascinating example about privacy, right? So first we have this, like, arguably one of the wisest, most wealthy person in the world who's still sending, confirm whether or not we can say this or not? Salacious text messages.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know how many people need to fall in this bucket until people learn, like, maybe you shouldn't do that. But also, then this, it harkens to me back to the story with Gawker and Peter Thiel, right? If you make a billionaire upset, Gawker or Peter Thiel essentially through lawyers just put Gawker out of business and they filed for bankruptcy a few years ago. I mean, I saw a tweet yesterday that legitimately said, like, the Bezos and his camp had considered buying AMI just to see how they found these photos, because we still don't know the source of this leak or how they got these photos and these text messages. So you were talking about a guy who could say, yeah, you guys made me mad. I'm just going to buy you, get all the records, shut you down, and then I have the answer to this one question that I've been wondering.
Think of the data mining they could do if they did that, huh?
Well, and think about the where's the folder.
If all
folder
the non-disclosure things are
yeah,
true.
Yeah, where's the Trump folder at AMI?
I'm sure the reason that they probably didn't do that is because they would have had the government looking into it, because he already owns the Washington Post. So it would have been a... too much of a
monopoly. Can't you acquire
the National Enquirer?
Yeah, but you know, when you start acquiring multiple
for Bezos, it's a rounding error. I mean, the number.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm saying clearly he could have afforded it. I think they probably didn't, because it would have looked bad.
Sure. But I think it's also just fascinating that somehow this guy who went from, "Hey, you were cheating on your wife," to now kind of this hero for taking the stance and being willing to put his private life on the line. And it's
I think really that was a good decision. It was going to happen anyway.
The PR, was great.
You might as well just lean into it.
I think it's got similarities to the whole revenge porn sort of backlash that's been happening legislatively, as far as, you know, protecting people's privacy, even though they recorded themselves doing acts of whatever. You can't just take that out and use that to intimidate or make money from or embarrass.
Sure.
Or whatever. It's similar to that.
It really reminded me of, and this is why I think this show is so great, because it teaches you the history, but Hamilton, the Broadway musical, the mega hit, Alexander Hamilton, essentially, he published years ago, hundreds of years ago, the Reynolds pamphlet, which was essentially him saying, yes, I did have an affair, but my papers are orderly. Like, I wasn't moving money from the treasury. I wasn't doing anything wrong. And I was like, whoa, like, history repeats itself, you know, 200 years later.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Well, we need to step away for a moment and take a break. You're in the moment on SDPB Radio. We have switched gears, and we will do so after the break as well. We're going to talk to Heather Benson a little bit and have some discussion about, passwords and how to deal with those and use strong ones and some tips and techniques for keeping track of them all. We're going to do that right after this quick break. We are back live now on In the Moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Ken Osborne, and we are talking with the computer folks today about all kinds of issues, national headlines, as well as maybe some tips this segment on helping you help others. I guess it's people helping people today. Heather, you wrote a blog that we've posted online, of course. That's kind of means you've done that, I guess. Technically, and we've linked that off of our Facebook page, but it's on sdpb.org, and you talk, go in depth a little bit about passwords. You talk about using strong passwords and why they're important, not just to use one master password for all of your accounts, and these are all things we've sort of espoused on the show over the years, and that's all fitting, but that can be a little cumbersome, can't it?
Well, for the group sitting at this table, it's, you know, probably second nature to have a good password, and we know all the little tools to make life easier, but the new series that we're working on, Tech for Seniors, it isn't second nature to everyone in our families, our friends, our neighborhoods, and I think there's an opportunity to have this discussion of how do you incorporate it in your own life, and how do you incorporate it in the lives of your loved ones that you can help out with. And a really great example of why this really basic discussion of passwords is important is just a couple weeks ago, there was a large cryptocurrency firm, Quadriga CX, whose founder died.
Yeah, I saw this.
Nobody has the password. So now $190 million of people's money, of their cryptocurrency, is locked up as his widow goes, I don't have his password. I have no idea what his password. And that is something that happens on that stage and happens in our real lives. When a loved one passes away and we haven't taken internet account access into our legacy planning, it creates issues. And with more and more people having online accounts, knowing passwords, sharing passwords, having a good password system becomes more important. And so that's why we decided to put this little blog together to have that discussion out in the open.
You use a password manager?
I do.
One password is the
one name password.
Of it. I use a different one. I use LastPass. I don't know, does anybody at the table use a handy one?
I use my iPhone. No, like, I mean, that's not a joke. Yeah. It has the keychain, and you know, any password I want, I can just go into the settings and retrieve it by entering, you know, well, in this case, my Face ID.
I think the first two you mentioned are the most popular consumer-facing ones, LastPass and
OnePass.
OnePass, yeah, for sure.
Well, one thing I just started using is Chrome now has a digested password feature where if you're signing up for an account, it actually digests a strong password and track it and keep it for you and manage it for you. It's not probably the most secure Because it is Chrome, in the Chrome website, but it is a simple way for people to use some strong passwords and that are unique to every single account.
Something, Heather, that you mentioned about 1Password is the ability to set up, is it, what, like you called it a room?
Yeah, I think the best way to describe it to the general public is like having a room. There's rooms that I just have the key to. There's rooms that my husband has the key to, that our daughter someday might have the key to, like our Netflix and our Hulu and passwords like that, that are family passwords, if you will. And when you especially start thinking around along legacy planning guidelines, that might be that opportunity that your attorney or a lockbox of the bank has this master password to get to those keys so that they aren't locked away forever. So $190 million isn't tied up because you never told anyone your password or created a route to get to it. But these systems, because the first thing that we talk about in the blog is make it complicated. And as soon as you make a password complicated and hard to hack, you make it really hard to remember. And if you have 22 different accounts, which it's very easy in this day and age to end up with 22 different password protected accounts, that's I think an average number in America nowadays. Having a 1Password account or a place that holds all that for you is a way that you only really need to remember one so mm-hmm. that you can leave the rest of them there. And I put in here the super low-tech way that is probably not the most secure way, but if I would rather see, and you guys can jump all over me on this, I would rather see someone have it written down on a Post-it note than have the same exact simple password for every account they have.
I mean,
if that's what you need to do to have good passwords,
if
then I'd rather
see
security
is the goal,
you.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. If access is the goal, maybe. We'll see.
I don't know. I mean, my wife just asked me this the other day about passwords, and she's like, well, where should I put it? And I said, well, put it in your phone, because she has, you know, it's fingerprint locked, and I'm set up to get into her phone on my fingerprint, too, so there's two of us that can get into it. I said, know where you put it. Including a post-it note in your office is safer than your phone. I say, you lose your phone, we can wipe it remotely. I mean, they can't get into it. I honestly think that that's the best solution. As long as your phone is secure, and if you're using, you know, fingerprint security or face ID security, it's as secure as you're going to get, really, as far as I'm concerned. So I just tell her, put your passwords in your phone, you know, on a notepad or whatever it is. I think that's as safe as anything, really.
Jeff?
I will say the post-it note isn't too bad as long as you have good physical security. If you're not worried in an office environment, it's a little bit different because you have coworkers and neighbors and stuff that maybe could read it. But at home, unless someone robbed your home, they're not going to get your password. And then you probably have other items and stuff that you're more worried about at that point anyway. So it's better than no password. Even, like I said, the Chrome stuff. Anyone who can log into your computer can immediately have access to all your Chrome passwords, but it's better than nothing. And they'd still need to be able to log into your computer and run Chrome. So, you know, you have to use a little common sense.
And it seems like there's a couple different levels here, right? I mean, there's Netflix and, you know, and that, and the sort of things where it's inconvenient if I were to get hit by a bus this afternoon and my wife didn't have the password to her bank account and that kind of stuff. She can go to the bank and get her own.
Yep.
It isn't going to be a problem, but certainly on the business side of things.
I mean, I think there's interesting, you know, for all the pushbacks on like biometric things, fingerprints, face scans. You know, we joke about someday like the technology is just going to be in our body, right? I think the controversy is like, do I want to give up like my face? Do I want to give up my fingerprint? And the answer is yes, because human beings will always skew toward the path of least amount of friction. And instead of having to have a sticky note or use a 1Pass, it's like, yeah, I'll just put this phone in my front of my face, right?
Absolutely. And you know, another thing.
I mean, I don't know how Apple's using my face, but I gave it to them.
right.
If your photo's on Facebook,
well, actually, you do know how they're using it, unless you don't believe them, because they've put out a statement on how they're using it. So unless you don't believe them, which, you know, is a whole other level of trust.
Doubting, I would say.
The other thing your phone does, which I really like, is it will suggest passwords. Of course, computers and things have done that for a long time. But again, if your phone saves those passwords and then you can get into them, that's killer. You don't even have to think of one. You don't have to go to an extra program to generate it. Just use the suggested, and then you can have a different password. And if you actually need to type it out, you can go into the password manager right there and get it out. Absolutely.
I mean, I think to your being generous, when you said, well, you guys probably do better than this, than the sticky note. And I think I think the biggest misconception is that people are good.
Oh, of course.
Because, absolutely. Like, what happens when you see most of these big leaks and breaches, it's like, we turned out the password was password.
For sure.
Or 123456. And it's just like, these people, I mean, these are people who should know better.
I've had tech, actual computer techs, reset passwords, and I'll say, hey, what'd you, you know, I need to get into the account. Well, it's password, but capitalize the P. Like, yeah. That's going to, you know, that's the big thing, you know. Anyway.
And so for kids listening online, always try the word password first.
Yeah, exactly, right? I'm trying to get into mom and dad's computer.
If you really get desperate, capitalize the P and add an exclamation point.
Or a one and then an exclamation point.
Jeff?
It's important, especially with password managers that recommend passwords and stuff, to remember. Over time, passwords need to keep getting better. A report just came out today that any Windows 8-character password can now be broken in less than 2.5 hours or about $25 worth of money on Amazon's web service. So if your password is 8 characters or less, anyone can brute force it and break it within 2.5 hours now. So now you need longer passwords.
Awesome.
So those password managers and those automatic recommend passwords, they're, you know, very long, complex passwords you're never going to remember. Even if you write them down, you probably never type them back in correctly all the time. But that's the way we're moving, and password managers really do help with that.
Well, and I think another thing that password managers help with, and if you're being conscientious when you're online, is just keeping track of what accounts you've opened. I mean, it's especially with online retail, you go, you're like, oh, do you want to have an account? You had your account, now your credit card's in there. And now you do hear about a big data breach, and you need to, well, did I? Well, if you're using a password manager and you're keeping all that information in one spot, you can easily check, because you could, it might have been 3 years ago, I set up my Target.com account, never used it again. But when there's a breach, I want to know. I want to be able to take action if I need to.
And that's where, like, things got super messy with Facebook, right? Because Facebook started doing that I can't remember what they called it, the social graph or connecting thing. So when you would go to a website, hey, you don't need to sign up for an account.
Oh, yeah. Just sign in with your Facebook account. Yeah.
And so we're all like, well, that's great. Like, awesome. I just clicked that blue F. And then we don't even know some of the things who have our information because, and you can go to settings on your Facebook and then see, like, permissions and find all the sites that they're sharing your data with. So that's one way to get rid of those. But yeah, you're exactly right, Heather. You kind of forget all the things you've signed up for.
Are they going to start getting away from that? I just saw it the other night. I went to sign up for it was a free something. It said, sign in with your Facebook account, sign in with your Google account, sign in with your Twitter account. Are we going to get away from that, or is that going to stay, you think?
The problem is
Facebook and Google have any say in it, because it's a way they can track you and profile you fairly easily.
Okay. Yeah, and even I think the third-party tools like it too, because what do they want? They want more sign-ups. They want more users.
And they want that frictionless experience of not having to go through and fill out a profile before you get access.
Now, they certainly don't want to look bad because someone else screwed up their data. So if Facebook continues to be careless, that might change. But yeah, if I'm building a new app that I want people to sign up for, I don't want, if the data shows me that less people sign up if they have to create an account versus click Facebook, I'm going to put that feature in there.
And, you know, in the corporate world, from a structure environment, we are pushing the same thing, right? We're pushing a one sign-in kind of environment where there is a centralized authentication mechanism which you authenticate yourself to, and then it distributes those credentials and or tokens, as we call them, to those various systems. But we don't do it in a manner in which we distribute your personal information like your phone number and street address and who all your friends are. We simply want to do it because then when it comes time to, if that person leaves, gets terminated, fired, whatever, we've got one key to turn in order to remove access to all of those systems. It also keeps it folks from having to put those stickers on their monitors because they've got 19 different passwords. The other thing I wanted to mention too, and I think Jeff alluded to it, as passwords or as compute power goes up, passwords need to get longer. And NIST, which is a governing body, the National Institute of Standards and Technologies, really recommended at one point that your passwords be 8 characters long and that you change them every, I think it was 180 days or something like that. What they found, though, was that it was making life difficult for people, and so they'd choose worse passwords because they would choose, you know, in those cases where you were changing it every quarter, they would have summer 2018, then fall 2018, then winter 2018, right? And it was really easy to guess what the next password was going to be, probably spring 2019. or they would put a number at the end, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4. So now the new suggestion is to make those 12, 16, even more characters long and not have to change them, but make them pass phrases, right? So now you've got I love Starbucks in the morning, rather than a single my dog's name plus a, you know, a two-digit number. So changing the way we do passwords is going, you know, very helpful in making things more secure and at the same time still rememberable. Because if I have a 16-digit random character, I can't remember that, but I can certainly remember, mm-hmm. you know, the flavor of macchiato from Starbucks that I like. So,
I don't even know if
that's a thing. I made that word up.
How long is this going to take to get off this endless cycle of changing your passwords and getting to a longer password?
Well, so a lot of people, a lot of environments that follow the strict NIST guidelines are doing it already. It's going to take a little while for people to become, there's a good example right there. He pulled out a YubiKey that generates a random number when you put your finger on it, I'm assuming. Do you have to do the touch part?
It's mainly a second, you know, authenticator
sure.
kind of a deal. For me right now, how I'm using it is a hardware way to second authenticate an account. But
and you do it where it appends it to the end of the password you put in?
This one isn't. I don't use it in that way.
Okay.
this is a second factor authentication.
So he brought out, because this is great for radio, right? a small USB device that you slip in, and it has a number associated with it that will provide a very long string of characters, which makes it difficult to remember, and obviously difficult to hack. But then gives you additional security depending on how you use it. There's a lot of applications that have built-in YubiKey support, and then there's others where you can get a Chrome extension to make it work. You can get you can make it append to this, you know, your existing password, that sort of stuff. Yeah. So I use one of those too in a number of different applications.
But I was just I didn't mean to derail you because I really wanted an answer to that question.
Oh yeah, so
which was you know, the fact it was, is this an ISO standard or is this a risk management standard or something that corporate people have,
yes.
you know, that we got to do every 60
yep.
days?
So NIST is a security framework that okay. is used by corporations all over. And of course, depending on what vertical you're in, whether you're in finance or you're in health or you're in manufacturing, there's different ones. But NIST is a nice general one that really almost everybody can
okay.
Adhere to because it's general security guidelines. Are people using it? Some are, some aren't. It's a little bit difficult to break that idea of we have to change our passwords every quarter or every 6 months because
that's been your training.
It's been ingrained in you for so long. And it does make sense that changing the password, but changing the password only helped us when someone was attempting to get into your account and they may have gotten to the point where they were just about to break in and then we changed it and foiled their plans. Well, that just doesn't, I mean, that's unrealistic these days. So, and it's also unrealistic to make people have to remember or to make them change it to a password that's less secure overall.
I've raised that question, and the answer that I got back was, well, when the standard actually changes, we'll consider that.
Oh, what do you guys follow the NIST standard? Because the standard's there now.
Okay, well,
you know,
that makes me happy. I'm smiling both inside and out because I, you know. I'll be happy when this happens, believe me. And I think it's going to make everybody more secure as well. So it not only makes me happy, it should make everybody happy.
Yep. But, and that whole idea of 16 characters or more password, people really get, you know, frustrated with that. They're like, I don't know any 16 character words. Well, it doesn't need to be a word, right? It's
that, that's
it's,
the point,
it's,
right?
It's using a passphrase. yeah, that's true.
You combine some of your favorite things, whether it's Cubs, Vikings, lattes, whatever, you come up with this crazy little song in your head.
Sure.
You
know, and I mean, in fact, there's a study saying that a passphrase is safer than if you tried to come up with a 16-digit random number on your own mm-hmm. because
numbers
it's
are easy
not
to
going
run
to be
to.
Random.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's going to be easily to easily break.
More characters. And XKCD, the online comic, actually made a comic about this, and the password that they used was glass table metal horse. And I remember that, having just read the comic, I don't know, it has to have been out there at least 2 years now. It's been quite a while. But that sort of thing, when you visualize it, because they drew it out. They drew a metal horse standing on a glass table, and now I picture that, and it's really easy to remember. And you put that string of words together, and the number of letters and the difficulty of cracking that password is pretty high.
That's
although don't use that exact one.
Yeah, yes, don't use that one because it's
come up with your own visualization.
That's right.
We need to throw this to another break. When we come back, we're going to do a little roundtable, talk about a little bit more news. But don't let that hold you back from asking questions. If you've got a password question or something we can help you with, please let us know. Again, inthemoment@sdpb.org is the email address, and 956-7372 if you want to send us a text. We are back in the moment on Tech Radio. John had to leave us, but we wish him well and thank him for his time on the show today. But Amos is still here. Joel is still here. Heather's still here. Jeff is still here. I'm still here, obviously. And you are too. And we appreciate you hanging in with us. This is a live call-in show, and we haven't taken much of that today, but that's okay. If you do have a comment or a question, inthemoment@sdpb.org is the email address. We have a text number. It's 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. Of note this week, I noticed Twitter kind of missing the point. The global community has been clamoring for an edit function. So I make this tweet, I spend 5 minutes sweating it out, I send it, and I realize I misspelled something. All I want to do is fix a than to a then, or take off an X, or whatever I did to screw that tweet up. And people have, I mean, seriously, they've been asking for this for a long, 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 long time, since the dawn of Twitter. And
it must be a philosophical reason, right? I mean, I can't imagine there's a technical reason for this. Well, they're
going to come out with a clarification feature, is what they're going to test. So you're sort of retweeting your mistake, but you're allowed to add color and texture.
Will there be like a strikeout over whatever you don't want so that you can still read it, but yet at the same time?
No, it's just an opportunity to add context to your mistake.
It's a different kind of retweet.
I'm glad I'm a Twitter consumer and not a producer, because I am a horrible speller.
I'm more of a consumer than a producer, but I do need to.
Don't you think that would fundamentally change how Twitter worked in the first place? If you could go back and edit it, I mean, yeah, I argue Twitter would be useless if people could go back and change.
Well, I understand the risk involved on their side. I mean, we deal with it on the Facebook side. If you run a business Facebook page and you type something out and you post it, and now it gets 100 shares, and then if I go back in and edit it and change the words, now I could at that point, it's been shared 100 times, change the entire context of that post. Yeah. Now there's going to be all these people who shared it, and their credibility is at risk, because now let's say I say something horribly racist in that post. What you'll see Facebook do, and it's an unofficial mechanism, but typically at that point my organic reach goes
done. You're 100% right.
And no matter what I did, even if I went from A to AN, because I was just doing a simple grammar edit. And I think that's the risk that Twitter's looking at. However, I mean, like having a strike through would be pretty straightforward. Facebook does offer, you can look at any post made by a public entity and any public comment made on a post and see if it's been edited. Most people don't know how to do that, but it is there. But I think that's what they're concerned about, is you can change the whole conversation.
Maybe there needs to be like a time limit where you can, you know, it's expressly for corrections.
Yep.
And you've got 90 minutes or whatever.
I'd even take 30 seconds to be able to recall. Because seriously, once I see it hit my stream, I'm like, oh my gosh, I misspelled that.
Yeah.
Even a 30-second recall. I reconsidered, or I suddenly woke up and said, I really shouldn't have sent that.
But I can't imagine we're the first ones to think of this. So what is Twitter's take on it?
It's essentially giving a retweet mechanism to clarify what you meant.
It's going to add context and color to what you meant.
And when does this start?
I think they're testing it. I don't know.
I think that's good. I think that's good.
Well, at the same time, they are themselves offering everyone a whole lot less info. If you guys saw what happened last week when they announced when their quarterly report came out that going forward on the next one, they will no longer be giving average monthly users or the total monthly users because the number keeps going down by significant amounts. Went down 5 million in the last quarter. Yeah. And that, of course, didn't get received well in the stock market, but essentially they're shutting the doors on what's going on behind the scenes because the numbers, nothing's good. And
I don't know that we can say for sure that that's the reason they're doing it. But
well, and you don't have good numbers, you don't want to talk about.
We can guess. Well, there are a lot of companies that don't share numbers like that just solely because they don't think that you're going to read them the way they read them. You know, I know Amazon does that. I know Netflix is big on that. They don't share their numbers because they're like, you're missing the point. If you're wondering how many people are watching Daredevil, then you're missing the point.
Although they just did start releasing numbers some shows.
Yeah. And
because they were pretty.
Well, I don't know if it was that. I think that was more strategic. They're like, you know, we're competing this show against that, or we're going to buy this series. So let's show them why we can do that. But I mean, I think you have to understand that they make decisions not just based on, well, that's bad, so let's not going to show everybody that. And they might have another strategy. I mean, we like to pick on Twitter. Everybody on this show, everybody on the planet. But I'm not sure that there's anything that's used more as far as social media out in the public. You know, when the news comes on in the morning, it is influenced by Twitter 10 times more than it's influenced by Facebook, I promise you that. So, and I think that's probably what they're thinking. They're like, we have reach that no one else has, but we're getting lambasted because of all of, maybe our users are going down, or maybe this, that, or the other thing. Maybe their users are going down simply because they're getting rid of fake users. That might be another thing. I know that they've killed off like 500,000 fake news Russian bot things just in the past few months. So, I mean, that might be another reason why they're doing it completely on the up and up, frankly.
Sure. Yeah, they had a little snafu really this week with their likes.
Oh, yeah.
The false reporting on numbers of likes. People's likes all of a sudden went down. They had a couple hundred thousand likes on a tweet, and all of a sudden it was 99. They're like, wow, what's going on? But it was wasn't a campaign against a certain political style. It was more of an oops in the background. And that sort of thing kind of happens. Amos, what happened to Wells Fargo this week?
Oh, Wells Fargo, they had some maintenance going on, which caused either smoke or dust to set off the fire suppression systems in their main data center.
No.
I forget. It's located in the cities in Minnesota, but a lot of their systems went down because when fire suppression kicks in, basically, if there's anything electrical that's generating it, they want that to quit, so power gets cut to everything, right? And so in those cases, what really should happen in those sorts of environment is they should have some sort of business continuity or disaster recovery plan where they switch over to a backup server or backup data center to pick that stuff up.
Yes.
There are some intricacies in there that reasons why that doesn't kick in immediately, especially with a bank with transactions. When you do move from one to the other, you're going to lose during that time frame. You're going to lose those transactions that happen in there. So they try really hard not to do that, so that any transactions of money going in or out of accounts doesn't get lost, and they have to figure out what happened there. Anyway. The long story short was it didn't go as planned, and they were out for some reports were up to 48 hours where there were people who were unable to withdraw money from their accounts. They were using their credit cards and debit cards that were getting rejected, and it just sounds like there was some poor or lack of planning or lack of testing, I should say. They had a disaster recovery plan that eventually they tried to implement. It did not go well. So then they come back to their main data center, and it got to the point where they were unplugging what were referred to as unnecessary items, because the hit that the data center was taking with all of the systems coming back up was also a problem.
Wasn't that an Ocean's, I don't know, was it 9/11? 10. Wasn't that a movie?
I haven't seen the Ocean series, but it certainly could be, because
you're describing, I think, one of the One of the bank robbery movies that I've seen in the past decade.
Yeah, well, foreshadowing, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, it's an excellent example of how we assume that in today's digital age that we're always going to have access to all of our finances, right? And our automatic bill pays are going to go out, and that anytime I go and I swipe that debit card, as long as I know I have money in the account, it's going to work. And now that we're going to a more cashless society, it's more important than ever that that sort of stuff works. So it was interesting. There was another gentleman I read a report about who was leaving the country, and he said, I'm leaving the country in 4 hours. I needed to get my cash exchanged into a different currency, but I could not do it because my cash was not available or accessible through the bank. And so technology, it's a wonderful thing sometimes.
Technology is a wonderful thing when it works.
It is.
You know, in theory, the cloud is
a wonderful thing until it isn't.
Is a thing that's, a most marvelous thing. But you need to have access to it, and it needs to work. But well, that's certainly gives pause to your old scout, you know, motto, be prepared and
put your money in your mattress.
Have a plan.
Right.
Well,
yep. Yep.
Not everybody does that, Heather. I know you do. You bury it in cookie jars, don't
that's
you?
That's right.
In the yard, your doubloons.
Yeah, you just got to remember which tree it's under.
Put it in my password protector.
There you go.
You should, absolutely. Well, we are running a little bit out of time today. There's lots of more things to talk about. I did want to mention one of the subsidiaries of Allstate, Square Trade. If you've ever bought something online and got this Square Trade contract, just bought one of the largest smartphone repair companies. It's iCracked, and that puts Allstate in the position of being a very powerful proponent of the right to repair and the right to repair legislation that beginning to start to hit some news and things. So that was kind of interesting that a giant insurance company hopping into that pond. Certainly something we can talk about on future shows as well.
The right to repair has been a big deal. You know, real quickly, I know we're running out of time, but the farm industry is really a big proponent of that, because there are cases where John Deere or International Harvester tractors have so much programming inside them that they're requiring them to go back to the manufacturer in order to get repairs, because the information inside those computers is intellectual property for them, and they don't want to open it up to third-party repair folks. And so now you're stuck paying those premium prices. Or in some cases, you can't get service because you are so far away from the dealership or from an authorized repair center that it's difficult to get service.
Or it's just too busy at harvest time or planting time. There's not enough people for the amount of repairs.
We do have just a quick one here for Joel. Should I update my iPhone each and every time an update is available?
Yes.
Yes.